Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Well, hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger. And today's show is actually a suggestion of more than one, actually many listeners. And the topic is, how do you deal with ill loved ones that you kind of have been friends with, or you've been a child of, or something? How do you deal with that? You know, the life expectancy has certainly changed significantly. Right now, the lifespan for males is 75 and 85 for women. I have an 85-year-old father and an 86-year-old mother myself, and very, very independent. I'm very blessed that way from the standpoint that they really don't require a lot of caregiving. But of course, as their health goes on, then I'm finding my life is having to change dramatically, because I want to be able to go to doctor's appointments and be able to just assist them in any way that I can. And the more readings I've been doing in the last several months have really been around, how do you deal with the loved ones that you have to take care of, but still stay healthy in the process? So when I started getting all this input from people, I thought this is going to be a great show. So that's what we're going to be talking about throughout the entire segment, is what can you do to be able to cope psychologically with the changes you're going to have to make in your own life, and being able to deal with parents or loved ones, or in some cases, a child that has a chronic illness or congenital illness, whatever it may be. And how can you do that and still remain healthy in the process? So I want to thank every one of you that sent me the emails and the suggestions for the show. If you have a suggestion that you'd like me to cover on a show, please go to my website, www.ritberger.com. And then you will notice on the homepage that it'll be submit your suggestion, and then send it to me. And then what I'll do is I'll create a show around it. And if I do, I will send you an autographed copy of my book, Healing Happens With Your Health. So please, thanks for the suggestions, and keep them coming. I'm also going to be taking your calls and sharing my medical intuitive skills with you. So if you have a question for me about today's topic or about your health, you can call me at 877-230-3062. 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S., Canada, and also for international callers. So international callers, of course, you'll have to do your calling number and then the 877-230-3062. I also want to let you know that I posted my August reading date. So if you've been considering having a medical intuitive reading or wanting to have one with me, it's a perfect time to go online. All of my readings are booked online. You can go to my website, www.ritberger.com. They do tend to go quickly. I always post the next month's readings the month before. So example, the 1st of July, I posted August. So if you've been considering it, I'd love to spend time with you and offer a different perspective, a more holistic perspective of what is going on in your body. And the purpose of that is because it can give you, again, this holistic perspective of what healing you have, you can do from many, many different levels. So again, all readings are booked online. They're first come, first serve, and it's www.ritberger.com. When caring for someone we love, whether it's a temporary disability or whether it's a chronic disability, and then also, as I mentioned, the case of a child with congenital illness, I have a granddaughter who has muscular dystrophy, just changed all of our lives, and especially my daughter's life. Or if you have a loved one that is dealing with a terminal illness, such as degrees of cancer and everything, it really isn't easy to be able to deal with that and to be able to figure out what to do with your life, because it just really takes a tremendous amount of energy and a lot of emotional fortitude in supporting the people that we have to take care of. And again, I mentioned when I first started the show, from the standpoint that the roles a lot of times reverse. In the case when we're dealing with caregiving for our parents, all of a sudden we have to become the parent and they have to become the child. And while that is a wonderful process for us to both be able to grow on either side, parents learning that we have really matured into this helpful person and a person that can take charge. But it is difficult for the roles to be reversed because the parents don't want you to take away their autonomy and independence. So it's really a very, very delicate dance that you have to do. So again, when it changes, what really changes around dealing with ill loved ones, again, temporary or terminal illness, what it does is it immediately changes your life from the standpoint that you're in control of it to now someone else's demands are basically driving your life. That means that you have to be available for doctor's appointments or many times actually move them into the home and then be able to be available. Physically, caregiving changes our sleeping habits, meaning how long we sleep changes just because of the demand, and then also the quality of sleep. This can lead to a lot of sleep issues for people. And in some people, the sleep issues can lead to depression on top of all the other psychological burdens that go along with being able to care for someone. When we do, we're always at a state of anxiety, low grade, and then also at a state of worry. Again, many times just low grade. So one of the things that you can do around the sleeping process that really, really works well is just get yourself a baby monitor. That way you'll be able to really have a sense of what's going on and you'll be able to hear if you have to get up. And it really does psychologically change the process to where you can get into a deeper REM sleep. You can get a better quality of sleep and you can wake up rested and your body feeling rejuvenated so you can start the day. It also takes a tremendous amount of physical energy because it requires a lot of times that we have to do lifting, bathing, we have to move wheelchairs, we have to be able to assist them with walkers, we have to be able to reach, we have to be able to bend down. And a lot of times if we allow ourselves to not stretch when we first get out of bed, kind of, I always use that same process that animals do. If you've been sitting for a long time or you're getting out of bed, the very best thing that you can do is stretch. Stretch before you get out of bed. Stand up on your 2 feet as you get out of bed and then just allow everything to just kind of settle in and then go about your day. And what this will do is it'll help prevent a lot of skeletal and muscular issues that are also part of the caregiving syndrome. It changes your routines and it requires being available almost on call. And then a lot of times there's rehabilitation that you have to go to, not only the doctor appointments itself, but also hospital stays and everything the day before any of this starts to happen, where you have your daytimer plan for 3 weeks, whatever it may be. The minute that this part of caregiving comes into your life, everything changes, all priorities changes. And what it does is it can lead to a very high level of stress. And over the course of time, and this is one of the primary things that I find as a medical intuitive with people who have to take on or choose to take on the caregiving role, is that stress, low grade, sometimes more heightened when there's an emergency or so forth, that over the course of time, it can actually weaken the immune system of the caregiver. And that's very, very important that you get your sleep, and that, again, now the next part of it is nutritional changes also occur, because a lot of times the person that you're caring for is put on a special diet. They'll lose their appetite. You're going to worry about them being able to eat. Are they eating enough? Are they being able to digest the way they need? And it's never fun to just cook for one, but it can be very difficult to cook for not only yourself, your family, but then to be able to accommodate other people's nutritional needs. In fact, a recent survey of caregivers found that those who ate alone were more apt to develop diabetes and hypothyroidism as a result of what they ate. A lot of times we're eating on the run. We may be at the hospital and we'll just go into the cafeteria and just grab whatever is there. So we're really not as mindful of the foods that we put in our mouth. And then you add stress and everything else. And it's very difficult for the body to work with foods the way it's designed. This survey also revealed that there's a tendency to eat more fast food, convenience foods, foods that are really high in carbohydrates, foods that are laced with food additives, and most important, foods that have a lot of sugar or corn fructose in it. again, all of these things are precursors to diabetes. Yes, it works wonderful because if we need a quick fix as far as energy, there's nothing better than simple carbohydrates or a little bit of sugar or, you know, caffeine, whatever it may be. But the bottom line of it is that it makes it very, very difficult for the body to be able to sustain itself in a healthy way. Psychologically, caregiving can be difficult because it requires decisions to be made that will have long-term impact. And what the difficulty is that your parents, if you're dealing with parents, a lot of times still believe that they're completely in control of their life. And a lot of times they have a perception that they have all their mental faculties. But in fact, what you may be dealing with is dementia or Alzheimer's. They see themselves as being okay. So there'll be a natural resistance psychologically when you suggest some major changes in their life. And the most important thing around the caregiving from a psychological standpoint is that how do you know when to call someone in? One of the things that I always suggest is that you become a part of every doctor visit so you can ask the questions that are needed, find out what questions the person you're caregiving has, also questions that you have. It really saves a lot of wear and tear and stress on the body to be able to really know what you're dealing with. And then also the information is very helpful for the mind so it doesn't start ruminating on things and get caught up in the fear. It's also going to be very important when medications are going to be involved that you know exactly what the medications are, how often they need to be taken. You'd put together a system so you can track it. A lot of times people that are in a ill situation, whether they have any kind of mind loss, mental loss at all, can a lot of times forget what medication that they're taking. Their eyesight is poor. So what they'll do is, I know that there's a lot of pharmacies now and actual, I think it's Walmart and Target are actually changing their prescriptions to larger print where people can read them. But somebody needs to help in the management of the medication and then also do some research on medication to be sure that you know what the side effects are. So if the person that you're caring for starts showing those side effects, then you can immediately call the doctor and be able to deal with them. Also, a lot of times as we age and we work with doctors, we can come in and we can have just literally boxes or bagfuls of medication. In my father's particular case, when I go and visit him, we do a lot of medication review. We do a lot of medication response. I ask him about how he's dealing with things, what issues are he having, what side effects, if there are any, and where he is right now. They've got him on three shoe boxes full of medication. And that's always very worrisome from the standpoint, is there any kind of interaction and so forth. And the many times medication will be prescribed by different doctors that may not know what the other doctor is giving. And a lot of times it's very important to be there to be able to answer the questions or to say, my father is on this or this or this, or the person I'm caring for this medication, is there going to be any interaction? What can we expect and so forth? So again, very, very important. So the other part of it is important, while it may not be comfortable, that when you get into a caregiving situation, it would be a benefit to be able to talk to an attorney and get a power of attorney signed. That way by the person and then also you as a caregiver. That way as the health starts to diminish, then you'll be in a position knowing the history of the person and how to deal with it to be able to authorize the care that is needed. Now, you heard me just take a deep breath because this is one that anyone that has ever done any caregiving, even if it's a child with a congenital issue, but especially as we have aging parents and then also as boomers, as we age and our children have to deal with it, the biggest question is, how do I help someone who doesn't want to be helped or who isn't willing to cooperate? That's probably the greatest psychological challenge that occurs when you get into that caregiving role. You don't want to bully someone. You don't want them to feel like you're taking their life over, but sometimes that may be what's required. So the best way to eliminate the problems around, you know, how to deal with someone who doesn't want to be taken care of or isn't cooperating is, before the problems arrive, arise, then sit down. If you have parents that are aging right now, they're good in good health, it's a perfect time to sit down and to involve them and talk about the options. What would they like to do? Where would they like to live? Would they like to go to a assisted living? Would they like to remain independent? Are they open for in-home nurses? What is their choice as far as the health services? What is their insurance? Just, it's really important to have those discussions while everything is in that healthy mode. And then that way, when it goes into the mode where you have to actually call upon the information, everything's been discussed. And then also it is agreed upon, and it makes it so much better. At this point in time, before parents get in ill health, it's a great time to talk about the benefits of long-term care before they become ill, and then also to agree in your siblings who is going to be the primary caregiver and what to do with that. Is that where the power of attorney is? And then how do the siblings communicate in a way where it has this sense of cooperation and everybody's on the same page, or it has the openness to where if there's any disagreement on how things should be handled, then it can be done in a way where the discussion has already been set up and there isn't the contentiousness that occurs. Every one of us, while we think we know what we're going to do and being able to manage ourselves or how we're going to deal with our own children or deal with our parents should something happen, once it happens and the parent or yourself becomes ill, your world shrinks. And what you do in that process is you look for anything and everything that you feel that you're having some kind of control over. Talk about the financial responsibilities and determine who's going to do what. By talking these things through, you can save a lot of mental wear and tear, a lot of arguing. There are many situations when I'm doing my readings with people that have been in caregiving situations, and then the transition takes place, that a lot of the siblings aren't even talking to each other because it was so stressful and there wasn't an openness of dialogue. One of the things, if that's the situation, I encourage it before it gets out of control. If you're not able to deal with the conflict within the family, hurt feelings, ego, so much gets involved in the process, the worry, the anxiety, the guilt, the disappointment. We have so many different facets when we're in that caregiving role, that what you might want to do is that you might want to find either a clergy, a minister, someone that you would be comfortable to talk to, a priest, or what you might want to do is you might want to find a kind of a mediator. They are now creating those within the hospitals, within a lot of assisted living facilities, someone that can actually be a sounding board where each of the siblings have the opportunity to express how they're feeling and what their fears are. So in a neutral, sacred way, comfortable way where everybody can feel like they're being heard. That's one of the things I found as, and again, with my readings and dealing with people that are caregivers, the siblings that get their feelings hurt are often the ones that just don't feel like they're being heard. Another facet in the caregiving is that it's very, very important to be able to, if you have a spouse, to be able to talk to your spouse about what your role is, what your responsibility will be, how that's going to change, maybe the time availability, how it's going to change the financial aspect of the demand on your own resources, and to be able to involve your spouse in the process as well. Again, creating the sacred space for them to be able to express their concerns. And then a lot of times, the fact that there's some resentment that's built up that they're going to have to somehow financially take care of your parents. Now, that doesn't mean that people are selfish or stingy. This is just uncharted territories. We are living so much longer that we are really experiencing the situation where our parents, when they get to that aging, or in fact as boomers, when we get to that place, that we're going to be in a caregiving role for possibly 5, 10, sometimes in some cases even 15 years. We have so many centurions that are living right now. So again, it's best to just kind of create all of this conversation from the very beginning. If you are in caregiving, really keep your health and your body needs, your emotional needs, your mental needs top of the list. And then what you'll be able to do is go from there and then be able to go through the process as healthy at psychologically and physically as possible. But please do know it is going to be a tremendous amount of energy that's going to be needed. So the last thing that I want to just mention, and then I'm going to take calls, is that it will be very important to be able to set up time where you can have an in-home nurse if you're caring for them in the home, or you might look at community services, or you might look at hospital services, or in the case of my father with the Veterans Hospital, the VA, they have in-home care and so forth, just so my mother can be able to have some freedom to get away and not be under that constant fear, anxiety, oppression that just happens. The energy in a house can become very, very heavy, and especially if a person who is ill has resentment and anger, and the person that's trying to take care of them seems to be at the bottom of the food chain, and a lot of times they just plain need to get away. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. There's a lot of services that are available in your community and so forth. And that's something that you might want to explore. So what I would like to do now is I'm going to talk about this more as I go into the next segment. But let me jump in. I'll take Sharon from Ohio. Hi, Sharon.
Great topic tonight. I dealt with that a lot. But my call is about my health. I have chronic fatigue, but I have hypothyroid. I was regulated for about 4 years on real tiny doses of bioidentic hormones, and then all of a sudden T3 anti-4, and then all of a sudden my heart started racing and I got chest pain. So yeah. I had to go off all of it, and I'm very hypothyroid still, and now it's at the point where my thyroid's greatly enlarged and my pituitary is not kicking in. My TSH used to be real elevated when the T3 and T4 were low, and now the TSH is low as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're getting anything around that or picking up anything particular.
Yeah, let's go in and let's approach it first of all. And by the way, thanks for being tenacious enough to continue to call back. I really do appreciate that. Rebecca said that you had called before, so thank you for that tenacity and for supporting my work. So going in physically with the thyroid itself, there are a couple of things. Once the thyroid starts going awry this way, while medications are something that it does sound like you have a lot of sensitivity, there are some things that you might want to seek out a naturopath. There may be some things that you can do from the standpoint of some capsules. Possibly a homeopath would be able to help you with some different homeopathic remedies that would help stabilize the thyroid itself, and would be able to deal with it from a thyroid medication standpoint. And bioidenticals has a lot of benefit, but a lot of times it, as you know, it can throw everything off. So what you want to do is look for some things that you can do that would be natural. Edgar Cayce believed that there were a lot of things that could be done from a dietary standpoint that could be able to help the thyroid just through the diet. So you might want to look at the book Nourishing the Body Temples by Simone Gabby. Simone did a lot of research of Edgar Cayce's readings about how acid alkaline and the foods that can be of value to the thyroid, the metabolic changes associated with it, and so forth. So you might look at something like that. Also, for the enlarged thyroid, even though it's deep within the neck itself, there are things that Edgar Cayce would also say, why don't you try some castor oil packs? Just put some castor oil on some flannel, or something that is natural, maybe some cotton, 100% cotton, put it on that area. And what it'll do is it will assist in the inflammation itself. A lot of times with a thyroid that's enlarged, it may have to do as much with inflammation as it does with the potential for there being nodules available. So that's the route that I would encourage you to take, a naturopath, homeopathy. I would be remiss, I have to at least say it, is to go and talk to an endocrinologist to find out, get a benchmark where you are, find out what is available, then you'll have to, you will have the information to be able to make a decision based on what allopathic medicine can present, and then also what the alternative approaches we'll take. One of the things with hypothyroidism, there's two areas of your body that's really important for you to take care of. The thyroid itself is tied to metabolism. If the metabolism slows down, then the body starts to put on excess weight. It retains more fluid. We get fuzzy thinking. Our skin changes. We have just so many different expressions that come from that low thyroid. So there's two areas. You will want to focus on keeping your immune system healthy. The immune system is very sensitive to the foods we eat. It absolutely loves greens. The higher the chlorophyll and the green, the better the immune system is. Also, red fruits and vegetables, again, with a book with Simone, it'll talk about acid alkaline. There's a lot of work that's out there, wonderful books around acid alkaline balance that would be very helpful for you. I just keep coming back to finding someone, whether it's a chiropractor that looks at things from a holistic perspective, and I keep coming back with a homeopath with you. And so I'm going to go directions, and it just keeps pulling me back to those particular two particular modalities that could look at things that would be able to work with you. The other thing is there's a double-edged sword to hypothyroidism. That is that the sleep cycles change tremendously, that circadian rhythm. You don't go as deep into the deep REM where the body detoxifies, rejuvenates, revitalizes itself. So as a result, there's that fatigue. So what you might want to do is looking at some naps, maybe a short nap, 20 minutes resting your eyes in the afternoon, see if you can look at that. I'm hesitant to suggest anything around 5-HTP or anything around the sleep cycle until we can find out where your thyroid is. So you can look at that. The other thing is that you, for some reason, chelation came in. You might look at that. Acupuncture came in just a moment ago. You might look at that. So find out what you can do. Do some research on what you can do from a hypothyroid. The other part is I talked about the immune system, and then the other part is the liver. That's very important to keep the liver very happy and healthy. That can be starting to take milk thistle. If you're not, it can also greens, reds, orange, yellows, fruits and vegetables. The liver loves that. So you may want to change diet as far as the fats that you intake and the meats that you intake. You'll want to go. One of the diets that would be very helpful for you, as I'm picking up, Sharon, is the Mediterranean diet. There's some wonderful books out there, the Sonoma diet, Mediterranean diet. You might want to look at some of those things as well. And then also, hon, are you doing any kind of calcium?
No, I'm just taking, liquid minerals, but not a particular calcium.
Okay. When you find someone, why don't you ask them about calcium? Because when you have the dynamics of a hypothyroid situation and your T3, T4 start fluctuating, it can actually impact the calcium assimilation, regulation, and everything else, and it could be a precursor for osteoarthritis or osteopenia. So because of this, with the kind of a history of it, and there is a history of it that I can take all the way back to your mom's side, then what you might want to do is you might want to look at ways to be able to keep your calcium where it needs to. Again, working with someone, you don't need a lot of it. I mean, it's not like we're going to put you on 8 calcium pills a day. That's not what I'm talking about. But that would be beneficial because it would be able to help regulate the dynamics between thyroid, parathyroid, and the kidneys that is part of the calcium. And then that could be able to serve you well where you don't have the predisposition for osteoporosis in the future.
Okay, then, my doctor thought that maybe actually the reason why I couldn't take thyroid is because maybe I have underlying cardiac disease. I don't, mm-hmm. do you see anything with why I can't take thyroid anymore?
I'm visiting your heart and your aortas. No, I'm not picking up anything. It feels like the thyroid, because you've been low on thyroid for a prolonged period of time. It feels like the best thing I can tell you, honey, it'd be like your battery that's being drained, and then all of a sudden you put it on a battery charger, and if the battery charger has too much energy to it, the thyroid's going to spike, and that little needle from low is going to go to high, and it's going to bounce back and forth. That's my sense of what goes on. When I go into the heart itself, and I'm looking at the muscles itself, I'm not picking up anything. I'm looking at the pulmonary aorta, I'm not picking up anything. The mitral valve, I'm not picking up anything. At one point in time, you felt like you did have a little bit of a heart murmur when you were a little girl. It looks like you've outgrown that part of it. But I'm not finding any kind of calcification. I'm not finding anything in the pericardium sac to show that we've got any kind of congestive heart failure. I think it just feels to me like it was just an electrical surge. And that's why I think I wanted you to first go from the standpoint of exploring what the alternative options are, but then also being able to find out what the base is. My sense is if you went to see a cardiologist and they did an echogram and some of the other things, they're not going to find anything. It's just tied to kind of that electrical system that gets overstimulated. That's what it feels like, the parasympathetic system.
Oh, okay.
Sympathetic system.
That makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, always my TSH has been elevated, and now that's subnormal. And he thought there may be a cyst even on the pituitary. Because that's not working anymore.
Right. You know, it's a chicken and an egg. If the pituitary doesn't work right, then the thyroid doesn't work right. If the thyroid doesn't work right, then the pancreas doesn't work right. Then the adrenals get overstimulated, then the immune system. So it's just kind of a darn chain reaction, pituitary. What has he done to check the pituitary? Has he done any kind of CAT scan, SPECT scan, anything on you?
No, he just ordered my internist didn't even catch the fact that it was serious, and my alternative doctor, I just saw him, and he did order an MRI. So
good. Good. My sense is they're going to find a small, and it does appear to be small. I kind of had to seriously go look for it. Benign pituitary nodule. That's what it is. It appears. I just went in and kind of was looking at it a little bit more. It looks like it's on the anterior lobe, which is the frontal lobe that is tied to hormones, tied to growth, tied to the metabolic rate of the body. Very, very small. And I'm not really, I can't tell you for sure it's a chicken and an egg. Was it the thyroid that went awry that caused the pituitary? Was it the pituitary that went awry that caused the thyroid? In either case, anytime we get any kind of hormone imbalance within the endocrine system, the TSH is going to change. So doing the MRI will be able to help you. It is very, very, very small. So if it should show up, I'm not real sure it's going to show up. So I'm going to have to leave that up to you. And if it still feels like there may be something there and the doctor says, oh, no, he couldn't find anything, radiologist or doctor, you might just ask to see it yourself and to explore the possibility of it being very, very small, but would that be causing it? I do find a family history on your mother's side with thyroid issues.
Yes, it showed up, well, late in my mother's life, but I figured it was maybe, you know.
Hormones.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a lot of the hormone aspect of it. But I can even go back to her mother, and I can go back to your great-grandmother. So that lets me know that we have a biological predisposition. It's just finding out what creates that perfect storm for it to be able to go off, to trigger it to the point where there's a problem. So, sweetie, focus on your immune system. Focus on your liver. Feed both of them healthy, and then seek some of those other things. And then good for you for going and getting the testing and the baseline and going from there. For some reason, I keep coming back with the bioidentical process, is that it was the combination. It was the bioidentical process and not just the straight thyroid. For some reason, I just keep getting this kind of blurry energy around it being tied to the bioidentical process, philosophy, approach, or something. That may be very well why it triggered the way it did, and it may be that it isn't thyroid medication completely.
Okay, I didn't quite understand that.
Okay, so what I'm saying is that I get a lot of confusion or blurred energy, as I call it, around the bioidentical. It may very well be that you cannot take bioidentical approach to working with the thyroid, but you may be able to find armor, or you may find something that is more natural based, plant based, which armor is that would be able to help you. I'm not sure it's a one size fits all that you can't take meds completely.
Okay, I understand now. That's what I thought you meant, but I wasn't quite sure.
That's okay. But thank you so much again, Sharon. I really appreciate it, sweetie, and again for supporting my work. All right, what I'd like to do now is let's go ahead and just jump in and let's do a quick commercial break. Stay tuned. I'm going to be talking more when I get back about how to deal with ill loved ones.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
ContactTalkRadio.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now. Toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Well, welcome back. Today I'm talking about how do you deal with ill loved ones. Tough topic. Good topic that we should do, especially when everybody is feeling good and in good health. It's a wonderful time for us to be able to have some conversations that after someone becomes ill and you get into that caregiver role, it's going to be difficult to maybe have those healthy decisions. I'm also taking your calls, so if you have a question for me about your health, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That's U.S., Canada, and international callers. Also, I'd like to invite you to my free July Your Health teleclass. I give a teleclass every month. It's going to be on Thursday, July 22nd at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. That's 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The topic for July is allergies. I'm getting lots of requests to focus on allergies and to be able to share some of the hidden psychological meanings behind it. The teleclass is 60 minutes in length. And during that time, I'm going to actually be talking about the causes of allergies, the different kinds of allergies, the hidden psychological meanings behind allergies. What do allergies look like in the energy field? How do you map them in the chakra system? And then I also talk a little bit about personality and the susceptibility to specific allergies by personality type. And then I also offer both allopathic conventional therapies and then alternative therapies. So again, it's 60 minutes in length, and what I'm going to be doing is talking about allergies, and then I always stay on the line about 20 minutes after the call, and then I do a lot of personal questions just like I'm doing on my radio show. So it's a very very fun time. It's a very beneficial time. I think the information is of value. I'm getting great feedback. If you would like to register for the teleclass, again, it's free. You can go to www.ritberger.com. It's RITBERGER.com. It is free. So if you or a loved one or a friend or a coworker or anybody has allergies, you might want to ask them to tune in. And then also following the teleclass, 4 days afterwards, there'll be an audio download and a printable PDF, which now takes me to the June teleclass that was on back pain, and both the audio and the printable PDF is available. The PDF itself is like a little mini pamphlet looking at, again, back pain from a lot of different perspectives. I think this one was 29 pages long. Great new feature we've added. So if you're not sure what PDF you want or which topic you're interested in, we just added a great new feature to the my website. You can actually go to teleclass, click on the products themselves, and that it'll have teleclass products. Click on it, and now you can listen to a 1 minute sound bite from the audio that's being available, and you can actually read a small portion of what the PDF is like to just be sure that it's going to give you the information that you're looking for, and you get a sense of what it's all about. So great new feature. We're just so darn excited about that. So again, if you're interested in purchasing any of my past teleclasses, there are 15 available there, or you want to sign up for my new class coming up July 22nd, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. When it comes to dealing with family members, the best thing, or dealing with ill loved ones, the best thing that we can do is that we have to really be able to take care of ourselves emotionally, and that means that we have to be able to have a reprieve from the situation and the stress associated with it. It's very important for us to set up our own support group. It's important to keep our spouses or partners involved in the process so they know where we are. It's important that if you're beginning to feel fatigued or yourself, or you're having actual some health issues yourself as a result of this fatigue, it may be that you're stomach is having trouble, you're having back problems, very important. Please don't sweep that underneath the rug and just kind of assume that you'll be fine and so forth. Keep the people who love you in tune with what's going on so they can monitor you as you're monitoring the people that you're taking care of. A lot of times when we take care of loved ones, there's a lot of resentment. There'll be a lot of pain when somebody's in pain. They're not normally themselves. There can be anger, outlash, there can be a lot of hurtful things that are said, and what we do is we get resentful, and we can experience anger because, I mean, all we're trying to do is help, right? And, you know, sometimes we'll have to say to the other person, you know, I am just trying to help you. And sometimes in the heat of the moment, we'll say, you know what, if you don't want my help, okay, that's fine. I'm just out of here. Now, in reality, we know we're not. That's not necessarily an unhealthy thing to say that, because it's even more unhealthy if you just kind of hold those emotions in, that resentment in. So it's important for you to have a support team, friends that you can talk to. And if that doesn't work, being able to find support groups maybe within the community, and also in the hospitals and so forth, just so you have a healthy way to be able to talk about things so you don't start experiencing health issues, and then also you don't become depressed in the process. Lots of patience, lots of compassion with the person that you're dealing with, but even more patience and more compassion is needed when you're dealing with yourself. Then, of course, we add the worry and the guilt. Are you doing the right thing? You're worried about them. We get caught up in the fear cycle. Are they going to be okay? Will I be okay? Will I be there when they need me? And so forth. So all of those things when it comes to that worry and the guilt. The only thing I can tell you is emotionally, we hold worry and guilt in our lower back, in our pancreas, in our thyroid, and then also our stomach can become very upset. That's a lot of anger. We hold anger and resentment in the stomach itself. And thyroid, what our thyroid is saying, we need to just speak up. You need to be able to, don't hold this inside. Don't suppress what you're feeling. Ask your questions. If it's not appropriate because it's just against your nature to lash out or to become angry, then find some way to be able to get away from the situation. And again, a healthy way to be able to talk to someone. The stronger the emotion gets, the longer we sustain them, the more potential is for us to develop a chronic illness, and that is not what we want in that caregiving. I've heard many say, I wish I could just take away the pain for the person we're caring with, or I wish that this happened to me rather than them because they're so nice, so good, so loving. Or I've heard people say, why them and not me? It is a natural tendency, especially when we're dealing with parents or we're dealing with a child or our spouse or our partner, is that in cancer, and that's one of the areas I find this all the time. Boy, if I could, I hear people say, if I could just take that away from them, then they would be okay. Well, the one thing is we need to be very mindful of what we say, because words are energy, words are power. Words can actually store in our body. And many times I find that it isn't unusual for the caregiver, after someone either transitions or has to go to another care facility, for them sometimes to even mimic or to show up the symptomology, or in some cases, even the illness of the person that they were taking care of. That's not to put the fear in anyone that's a caregiver, but it is truly, truly to encourage, find healthy ways to not keep it inside. When we feel worry and guilt, the brain actually releases high levels of a neuropeptide. It's called the neuropeptide Y. Y, literally the letter Y, which increases the dosages that causes the immune system to break down. Now, when I say increases the dosages, what I'm talking about is that neuropeptide Y actually starts sending out these large dosages of this neuropeptide, which really causes the immune system to start to weaken, and it causes a loss of the physical stamina. The final problem is that the caregiver that is in the process of taking care of a loved one, isolation is not healthy. Not healthy for you, not healthy for the person that you're in taking care of. We aren't intended as a species to be loners and to be alone. We're very much pack social. We need to be around people in order to be able to feel healthy. So again, support network is very important. An animal in the house is very important, just so you have some areas to be able to divert your attention off of the task that you have and that daunting emotional burden. So again, important. I'd like to end the with talking about, I've got another call, but I just want to end it with this cliche that I found really works well. I use this with my mom. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going. Now that's the cliche that we hear so much. And then what I changed it for my mom. I said, when the going gets tough, just get going. And what that means is that my mother needs to be able to get out. She's very vital. She's very alive. And what that means is, Mom, let's find ways that we can find someone to assist Dad on time, so you can have those 2 or 3 hours a day, or you can have that day during the week. We just need getting you going, Mom. We need to get you out of the house. So a little bit of my personal story there, but it is very, very important for us as with the aging changes in the lifespan, and that we just take care of ourselves while we're taking care of others. Well, I'd like to take Jessica from California. Hi, Jessica. How are you today, sweetie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How can I help you?
I wanted to ask you about my migraines. I had them for some years ago, and then I started taking Natto. And they seem to go away, but I have gotten, as of late in the last 3 or 4 months, gotten a couple more. And they, when I get them, I get the visual zigzag lines, and they're pretty debilitating. Yeah. And I am wondering if you can help me figure out what the triggers are. I have a theory.
Go ahead. Share your theory with me, sweetie, okay, so I can validate you.
My theory is I got one while I was in yoga class. Mm-hmm. And so it got me thinking that maybe it was part structural. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to just say it. I think it's my sternocleidoid mastoid muscle that's triggering my trigeminal nerve.
That is accurate. That is accurate. So what you'll find that there are certain yoga positions that you're in that tucks your tailbone under in mm-hmm. that sitting position for a prolonged period of time. It causes the lumbar part of the spine to not go into its natural curve. It's throwing your head forward. It could be some of the positions that you're on your hands and knees, that you're actually putting your legs out. It could be the sitting position. It could be the position where you drop your abdomen, you arch your back. There's a lot of different things that it could be, and that is accurate. The area that it's really impacting is two places. One is it's in the mid-back, just between your shoulder blades itself, up from your shoulder blades, right in that area. And then it's also impacting the brachial plexus, which is right above where the neck and the shoulders come together, and that's okay. where it's triggering the muscle, that little fine mastoid muscle, and then also the nerve itself. What it does is it creates almost a circulation issue where it feels like it's a vascular issue, and the compression, the movement, the trigger at that point in time, and it just radiates right up into the head. There's some things that you could do that could help is from the standpoint is to be putting, you know, if you have one of those half donuts that has lavender in it, you could add a little bit of heat to that area. That would be able to help as well. One of the things is that, have you, sweetie, have ever been, anybody ever talked to you about your slight TMJ that you have?
Well, yes, I just went to the dentist.
Good.
He told me,
okay.
He said, because I meditate and I do yoga and I'm aware of it, and it has been flaring up as of the last couple of months where I feel like I have cavities and I go in, I say, my teeth are really sensitive, and he says, you don't have cavities, I think it's right. your TMJ. But he doesn't want to put a brace in my mouth unless he says he has to, because he feels like I'm doing the mind-body techniques that he prefers people do, mm-hmm. but maybe it's not working.
Well, what I was going to do is when I touched the TMJ and I went to the occiput in that, and I went immediately to craniosacral work. Have you done that at all?
Yes, I have a therapist. I went to go see her just probably 5 days before I got my latest migraine.
Okay.
But whatever you tell me I can do so that I can keep doing yoga, because I love it a lot.
Oh,
and I can also, you know, I mean, if there's something I can do so I can prevent the triggers, and if that's seeing my cranial sacral therapist very regularly or getting massage, I mean, I'm willing to do anything.
Right, but right.
So, yes, okay. I have a cranial sacral therapist.
Okay, so what we want to do is we want your massage therapist to work with your shoulders, your neck, and then also, which of course they'll work through the whole body, but shoulders, neck, and then also down lower back sacroiliac joint. That will keep you loose in that area, and so forth. There are three positions that you do regularly. One feels like it's hands and knees. The other one feels like it's a sitting. And I'm not sure that it's the lotus position, but one of them is sitting, and one is where you appear to be holding your legs or extending your legs. Those are the three positions that I find that skeletally are causing a misalignment. And if you hold that too long, the muscles feel like they're trying to lock it down to protect the spine, to protect the neck, to protect everything.
Yes.
And what I would have you do is just spend some time with those three positions, identify them, and then what you want to do is don't stop doing them, because they really are part of your routine. Your health and well-being is your routine, sweetie. It's not about eliminating. It's just about cutting down in some of the positions that you're holding, as long as you're holding, and see if we can get those muscles to remain relaxed so they just don't start tightening down because they're trying to protect your spine so nothing can happen. The other thing is the cranial sacral will be helpful. If you do, I would encourage you to do it regularly. I don't know what that means. Talk to your practitioner. The reason for it is that if you do it sporadically, because the spine gets off, the cerebral spinal fluid gets off, when the craniosacral therapist works, then it's like they have to get your head on straight, and then they have to get the cerebral spinal fluid straight, and it can be too much adjustment too quickly for the way that your body holds itself on a, you know, consistent basis.
Okay.
So you might want to look at going back and even if revisiting it every week or every couple weeks, put together a regimen that you are in control of. It isn't, and your craniosacral therapist is fabulous, by the way. It isn't about, you know, booking you out for 4 months. It's just doing that.
Okay.
The other thing is I agree that you don't need the night guard itself, but one of the things you might want to do is you might want to change the position of your pillow, the way that you're laying on it. You might want to look at some things that can be done there. You might want to look at doing some acupuncture. That would be able to help you tremendously as well.
Oh. Okay.
What you're dealing with is you're dealing with a structural issue. You are absolutely 100% accurate.
Great.
Good. Perfect. good medical intuitive you are. Yes, and it is. The yoga and the meditation is very important for you to stay in your skin. You're an indigo. You have a tremendous amount of energy. If you don't keep that body moving, you're just going to become like a racehorse that's put in a paddock that never gets out, and you're just going to become muscle-bound. So good call.
Okay, so I can keep doing the yoga. I just need to help my body with the structural parts of the yoga.
Exactly, and just not hold some of these three positions. As long as you're doing, just give your body a chance. Be real mindful of where it is and what it's talking to you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you are welcome. Well, thank you all for listening to the show. I hope you found today's topic of help and value. I'm going to be back next Wednesday. I'm going to have a conversations with Carol. I hope you'll join me then. Have a wonderful week, and I'll see you next week on the radio.
You've been listening to the Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com. See you soon.